time of the night.
Ready?
Well,
wait a minute. Wait a minute, hon. It's me.
Jesus.
I messed up.
Oh, Lord, take care of me.
Yeah. You want to rest a while, Rich?
I'll do it this time. I got it. I feel my way.
Take two.
Ready?
Okay, let's go.
Womp, bomb, a loom, bomb, lomp, bomb, bomb, tooty boot, oh, rude. Tooty boot, oh, rude. Tooty boot.
You can't help but move.
Back in the 50s, we'd never seen anything like that. Like the Beatles, you know. He was a huge influence on us.
Fantastic. The beat, man, and the feel. Richard was creating something new.
Rolling again. Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Pull up my money, don't.
When Little Richard started making those records, it's like taking the best acid in the world, you know. Watching him, I mean, that's how the Rolling Stones became the Rolling Stones. And bought a
knife. When Richard started to perform, you can see he was a queer kid.
I woke up this morning, Lou, there was not in sight. I asked my friends about it, but all the lips was tight.
With all this makeup on it. Updo hairstyles, all of that. He was a pioneer. And so he just kept coming.
For a long, long time, Little Richard was the top of the sort of artist food chain. He was one of those artists that carved out that path for others to walk down.
Let it all hang out! With the beautiful Little Richard from down in Macon, Georgia. I want you all to know that I am the king of rock and roll!
He had to stand up for himself. Because of the music industry, they just never gave him his flowers.
Would you welcome Little Richard?
And here he is.
Shut up.
What a life he has had.
See, I was rocking all the time. Then my spirit started rolling. That's where it came from.
You said you turned away from the devil's music.
What shall it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul?
I believe you're the only person who ever claimed to be both the king and the queen of rock and roll.
They said that I was, and I wouldn't refuse them not one time.
Arena presents Little Richard, King and Queen of Rock and Roll. Archive helicopter footage of a high-rise city center, Los Angeles, California, 1985. A photo shoot.
Richard, do you have like a favorite side?
Yes. This is my little side. And this is my big side. I like both of them.
At that point in his life, Richard wasn't playing rock and roll.
Ooh, that's gonna be good.
We were very, very close friends. I met Richard in Los Angeles in the 70s and became part of his band. We bonded.
Your eyes may shine, your teeth may grit, but none of my songs you will get.
Ron Jones.
Years later, I would go visit him. He was living at a hotel on Sunset Boulevard. With the spiral staircase and all of that, I'd go to the lobby and hang out. And then Richard would come down from the elevator. And there's people in the lobby, and they say, oh, that's Little Richard. He said, oh, hey, baby. And he's waving at everybody. And he would embrace people, and they would ask him to sign autographs, and he would sign autographs. So we'll get through that. Then the driver would come. He would just want to ride.
Good golly, Miss
Richard is in the back of a white stretch limo as it drives through Hollywood.
The conversation along the road, it could be about anything. We'll talk about his life, you know, the beginning of rock and roll.
When I came on the scene, there wasn't no rock and roll. Everybody was playing blues. You know, dun 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 dun, dun 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 dun, dun dun. That's every blues singer in the country was doing that. And I got tired of dun 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 dun. You know, I created rock and roll. Didn't even know what I was doing.
My experience with Richard was that he was always trying to tell his story. Richard, he wanted to be heard. It was because of what he's been through. He was there in the beginning. His story. Here's the story of rock and roll. He was born in Georgia, Macon, I believe.
1932. A sign reads, White Entrance.
He's in the South, so, you know, there's the Jim Crow stuff. You know, segregation. But Richard would say, when he was, you know, 10 years old, he wasn't aware of stuff like that.
I'm from a little country town where you see the chickens all over the yard. You know, it's like a little country town. And you would hear people singing all over the neighborhood.
Archive footage of cotton workers, then a crucifix dangling from the limo's rearview mirror.
And then late at night, I would run down the street singing. Everybody wanted to kill me in the neighborhood. Left at the next corner. But it was really, really something. And I used to play the piano every Sunday, you know, give me that old time, talking about religion.
Give me that old time religion, good religion that it used to be.
One thing that always strikes me about little Richard, when he would talk about his hometown, two of the themes that always came out were religion and music. Every black community in the South had a church on every corner.
Writer and historian Tawana Steptoe.
In those churches, you know, they would improvise. They played loudly to be heard. People are singing with their feelings.
There's a lot of black churches that play gospel music. You can't tell it from rock and roll because the black churches are so rhythmic. You go in some black churches, they have a better band than I ever had in rock and roll.
Before there was a rock and roll, those churches were rocking.
When I was a little boy, I said, one day, I'm going to do that. And so I was singing gospel music every day. I always liked women singers. I like the way the ladies sing high. And I love the Mahalia Jackson, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and Clara Ward singers. I like, you know, I wanted to be like that.
Packing Up, Packing Up by Clara Ward. Ron Jones nods and takes off his headphones.
Absolutely. You can hear in that, of course, the famous woo. So even all those early on gospel songs like that, that's what they're doing, and Richard took it to be na 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 na. He made it rock and roll, na 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 na, with a high voice.
You can hear. I took all those little things that I had from a little boy, and I just put them together, made a song. When I was a boy, I knew that I was different.
Richard Penniman came from a huge family. His mother eventually had a dozen children, and his family described him as being trouble.
I was so flamboyant. You know, I was wearing my mother's makeup, lipstick, everything, all over me.
Even as a young boy, he's developing a style that didn't play by the rules.
I used to play house with my cousins, and I wanted to be the mama, you know? See, the girls loved you, but the boys hated you. They called me sissy, punk, freak, faggot, and they used to want to fight you. And so I had my first experience with a little boy. I told my mother, and she used to tell me to hush.
In the 1940s, homosexuality is a crime.
Most Americans are repelled by the mere notion of homosexuality. A vast majority believe that homosexuality is an illness.
My grandfather was a preacher. My daddy, he said he wanted seven boys, and I was messing it up because I was gay. Right at the light. That's it. You know, so I was always considered a bad boy.
Back in the 70s, sometimes on the road, he would come see me in my room, and we would talk. I never forgot what he told me about his dad. When he saw his son dressed with a wig on, with makeup on, he tied him down and beat him.
Little Richard's valet, Charles Moore.
Beat him until he go unconscious. But Richard said, it didn't faze him. He did his own thing regardless of his dad. No one could tell him. He would say, be what you want to be. And that, to me, I admired him. I still do admire him for that.
My daddy, he put me out. He told me I had to do what he wanted me to do or else get out. And so I didn't do what he said. I got out.
He left home. But his whole life, he wanted to be accepted by his dad. But his dad ended up dying before that happened. Father got in an argument with one of Richard's friends. The guy shot him. His friend killed his dad. I can only imagine, you know, what it was like in terms of that guilt. Inside of him, there was something always fighting.
You're listening to KCRW 89.9 FM. My name is Tom Schnabel.
And I'm Roger Steffens.
Welcome to KCRW, Richard.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. I'm just speechless. I got to just get... Woo!
As well as Charles White, who is the author of a brand new book called Little Richard, The Quasar of Rock.
When I started to write his life story, he used to say, Dr. Rock, I'm omnisexual. But really, he was torn by it.
Now listen, do we call you Little or do we call you Richard?
Oh, whatever is suitable and fitting.
Sexuality was a dilemma for him. But he wouldn't be obvious.
You know, my first impression is you're not little at all.
Oh, no.
I don't mean you're overweight, but I mean you're
no,
a tall
I'm not.
Person.
Oh, everything is big, I must admit.
He has great humor and great fun.
What does that mean?
Charles White opens a box of cassette tapes.
Oh. Right. They're all Little Richard. I interviewed him for the book. He always wanted to be a great musician. But really, he wanted to be accepted.
A photo of Charles with Richard.
So, I left my hometown when I was 14.
And that's where it all started.
1946.
I joined a show called The Broadway Follies. To me, they was the nicest people I'd ever met. I became their vocalist, and they changed my name to Little Richard.
Little Richard came up through the Chitlin Circuit like I did. Let me explain Chitlin Circuit. At that time, all across the South, it was segregated. And so if you were black, you had the Chitlin Circuit. It got its name because they always served the inside of a pig or hog, chitlin, the guts. And so everybody eating chitlins, the joints like this, we're sitting there now. You know?
Blues musician and friend Bobby Rush.
Louis Jordan, Caledonia. I sung that song every night because I didn't know no other song but that song.
Caledonia! Caledonia! What make your big head so hard?
I thought I was famous then. But there wasn't nobody screaming over me but me.
I remember Little Richard and I. Yeah, this stuff. When I came off the stage, it was his time because he was starting the show. He said, Bobby Rush, don't go nowhere. Stand right there. He said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you something about this man here. Oh, I got my chest stuck out. I'm waiting for the glory. He said, myself and Bobby Rush, we are the prettiest men in the world. And I did like this.
He hides his face.
He thought he was the best looking man in the world, you know. But one thing he had was talent.
A quiet country road.
So we would do the show, get up the next morning and go to the next town.
Neon signs and nightclubs.
You come to New Orleans, you play the Dewdrop, man. When you went to the Dewdrop, man, it was like a country hall in New York, man. You was like in heaven, man. It was it.
The Dewdrop Inn. Well, this was the hippest place to play in town. Little Richard came in here, and one time I was his opening act. Richard was a really flamboyant dresser with the glamorous suits and ties that he wore with the hair up with the bouffant.
It was quite popular in those days for men to wear their hair like that. So I just took it a step farther, put mine a few inches higher than everybody else. I was the only guy wearing eyelashes. I was the only man wearing makeup.
You know, a lot of people thought he's some wild and crazy guy. But, you know, everybody from all walks of life came into a place like the Dewdrop. We had doctors, lawyers, pimps, prostitutes, rich, poor, you know, LGBT, you name it. Even the MC, Patsy, she was the female impersonator. And Patsy might come out in a big gown with can-can slips and say, good evening, darlings, welcome to the Dewdrop. And Patsy would lift up the evening gown and say, come on and get the rest.
Band leader Deacon John.
It was New Orleans, man.
The drag scene is definitely a thing that New Orleans has been doing for a very long time. We got the whole setup from all the older queens who came before us.
Big Frida.
Being a queer kid from New Orleans, I can relate to what Richard went through back then. When you meet people that's just like you, it feels just fabulous. That gives you a moment to lay your hair down and be yourself. You can talk the way you want to talk. You can walk the way you want to walk. When you're different, you got to have that support, you know? A community of people that shows you the ropes.
These guys, these female impersonators, I went with them and they wanted me to dress as a woman. Instead of saying he, it was a she.
He creates this Princess LaVon character and she would just dazzle the audiences.
Ain't that good news?
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 Everybody's blues crazy.
I wore the eyelashes and the headbands, and I have so much mascara on when it looks like mud.
So at this point, he's writing blues music. He's singing and performing R&B. There's this great story where he's whipping his hair around and he turns to the audience and says, I'm the king of the blues and also the queen too. And so even though the Princess LaVonne character gets retired, I think that he took her with him.
Ron Jones.
Richard was the greatest marketer of himself or anyone that I knew. He was constantly putting himself out there. So he set his demo tape to Specialty Records.
I waited 1 year. Can you imagine them having me wait a whole year?
Taxi, taxi, take me anywhere.
We didn't listen to the tape right away. It was a scratchy tape, and it was poorly recorded.
Voice of Art Roop, founder of Specialty Records.
He just kept calling us. So finally I said, find that tape. And we found it, and we listened to it.
She got my money, but I don't even care.
And so if it hadn't been for Richard's persistence, we would have never met Little Richard.
They had me to meet them in New Orleans, and I met them down there.
1955.
I got it on the stuff of food.
All right, stand by, please. This is Wondering, done with a lot of feeling. Take one.
I recorded some blues. I recorded Wondering.
I just stopped the session because we were getting no place fast. Great singer singing a good song, so what? And when we went into the Do Drop In, there was a piano, all of the boosters, rounders, pimps, whores, and everything else was hanging around. And that was when I began to know and understand Richard. Because that's all you got to do is give Richard an audience, turn the lights on, and the show is on.
And Richard jumped on the piano and did a wah ba ba loo ba ba la bam bam. So they heard it and said, wait a minute, what's that? There was a hook that they had never heard before. But Richard had been singing that phrase for years, you know, on the Chitlin circuit.
And so I started to sing it. Wah ba ba loo ba ba la bam boom. If it don't fit, don't force it. You can grease it and make it easy. If you want it, you got it. Tutti frutti, good booty.
Well, the lyrics could be interpreted as gay sex.
They're not gonna play that on the radio.
Tutti frutti, good booty. And everybody knew this ain't about ice cream. But the primary reaction from the producer's point of view was that, hey, this sounds like a hit record.
I asked him, did he have a grudge against making money? He said, no. I said, good.
They said it was smutty, and so they helped me clean up my own lyrics. It was my song. I bought the song there.
Yeah, so we wrote the words Tutti Frutti All Routine, and a girl named Sue and a girl named Daisy put Richard on the piano, and in 15 minutes, I think we cut two or three cuts, and it's been history ever since.
Producer Robert Bumps Blackwell.
Ready? Okay, let's go.
Wah bam ba loom bam ba bam bam tooty boot, oh root. Tooty boot, oh root. Tooty boot, oh root.
The beat, the up-tempo of it. He was on his way to the rock and roll now. It was the first step in crossover. Blues and R&B had a baby.
I mean, I love it. When I first heard it, I was like, this me all day. I mean, just the word tutti frutti. it connects you to the gay community. You know, we are Tutti Frutti's. That was one of the slang words that the mainstream community may did not know at the time. I just know all of us Tutti Frutti's were going crazy. You can hear this is a song directly for us. And I mean, I think it was just horrible how they stole everything that he did.
The limo ride.
When I came out with Tutti Frutti, Black Records was played for Black people only. Black artists had never been received by the white station.
Pat Boone.
At that point, I was a pop artist. You know, what I wanted to sing were songs about love and happiness and all that. That was what they played on the radio back then. Rhythm and blues music was called race music. Here I'm a church-going white kid from Nashville. I knew very little of it. But then when I heard a song by Little Richard called Tutti Frutti, I loved it. I just flat loved it. And so I thought I'm going to do my version of it.
Jumping into 10th position this week, Tutti Frutti. And here to sing it in person is the man who made it a hit. One of America's greatest recording stars, Pat Boone.
When I recorded that song, it was hard to say. What was that again? I was having to write that out. A wop, bop, a loo, what, bump, bop, write that out, write it out so I could sing it. A wop, bop, a loo, mop, a lop, bop, bop. My version took off like a rocket. It was a million selling hit. The kids loved it.
Pat Boone came out singing a white version of Tutti Frutti. I was very disgusted because I was just coming on the scene and he sold more than I did.
I mean, you have this white straight man that's saying Tutti Frutti when he really don't know the meaning of the song. And he made all the money too. It's just not right.
Listening to music when I was a child, I grew up with covers and hearing people reinterpret music. But when I hear Little Richard playing Tutti Frutti, and I hear Pat Boone singing Tutti Frutti, that painted a real interesting picture to me. Society was telling me, hey, Nile, if you want to be a musician, you can't be Little Richard. You have to be safe.
Nile Rodgers.
But Little Richard, he was always a fighter. He said, okay, well, that's what they did. Well, I'm going to do the next one a little faster. I'm going to speed the tempo up and see if you can do that to make it uncoverable. And that was Long Tall Sally.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he has a music, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby.
But if I can sing wop, bop, a loo, wop, blop, bop, bop, I can sure sing Long Tall Sally.
Gonna go tell Mary about Uncle John. He said he had the blues, but he has a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby.
Mine sold a million and a half like that. Another big hit for Pat Boone, which some people think, if they didn't live through the era, think that we were taking something from those black performers. No, we weren't. We were introducing him to a much bigger audience. And I've said many times, I think I and Elvis were midwives at the birth of rock and roll.
You ain't nothing but a hound.
Big Mama Thornton.
I knew Elvis Presley was drawn to rhythm and blues music, same as me. He loved the excitement of it, the freedom of it.
Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show.
You ain't nothing but a...
All the musicians on stage are white.
Then when Elvis started performing Big Mama Thornton's Hound Dog with basically the same arrangement, most people knew nothing of the original. That is, at least in the pop world.
You know, you have to remember Elvis and his white contemporaries.
were afforded more opportunities for airplay than the black artist could ever hope to get.
A lot of white kids, they would buy my Long Tall Sally or my Tutti Frutti, but they would buy Pat Boone's and put it up on the table and put mine under the table to satisfy their family, because their mother wanted this white image for them. We were in the same house, but different locations.
It makes me sad, and it makes me angry, too. It affected, you know, a lot of black artists during that time, you know. But then the white teenagers said, wait a minute, I don't want to hear Pat Boone singing Tutti Frutti and Long Tall Sally. We want to hear the real thing. Forbidden fruit tastes the sweetest.
Ready, set, go,
and so
go.
Little Richard just started putting out hit after hit.
I was the first black artist to go top 40, to break the racial barrier, that's what I should say.
To be a black artist and go to the top of the pop charts, like, it was amazing to me.
This is Alan Freed, kids, rolling right along with your own special brand of music.
England was not playing rock and roll. The BBC were not really playing rock and roll. But there's a country called Luxembourg who had this huge antenna. And in Liverpool, we could hear their radio, what they were sending out. And they had the Alan Freed Show.
Man, that Little Richard really rocks.
So my mate Roy and I, we would sit 4 o'clock every Sunday. This is what we did, is go and listen to this show. Little Richard came on, first time we'd heard him, like, what? He was just so great. But what was great, because we were young teenagers, he said, shag on down to the Union Hall. Shag on down. You know, it means something different in England. Shag on
down by the Union Hall. Ringo Starr.
And now, here's Little Richard with Lucille.
When I first heard Lucille, and that riff, to hear something like that just suddenly out of nowhere was, well, mind-blowing, you know, gobsmacking, you know.
Keith Richards.
Not got enough recognition for writing songs like that. And an incredible talent.
I made Lucille up from a female impersonator in my hometown. I felt that it was risque.
I can always remember, you know, you'd just be waiting for the next Richard record to come out. Well, it's been 2 months, you know, it should have been. Those records had a big effect on me and my generation. They threw a whole different light on life and its possibilities.
Back in those days, everybody loved me. Alan Freed, he put me on the hit movie.
Don't Knock the Rock.
Now, here's that real solid man of rock and roll, Little Richard and Long Tall Sally.
Going to see that movie was just amazing. We had seen nothing like that in the world of music and cinema. It was so extraordinary. The whole makeup thing and his high pompadour, his foot up on the top of the piano. And of course the voice was like a volcanic eruption. The end. The cinema was like an undiscovered Egyptian tomb. We were so in awe that we could hardly speak. You were in a state of shock. It was that powerful.
People like Chuck Berry and Little Richard, I think these guys, especially Richard, they knew that they were on the forefront of something new. I don't think they all knew what it was, but they realised that they'd broken through something really important.
Rock then became a force. And Little Richard was always leading it.
That's my house right there on the left where I used to live. That's the first house I ever bought right there. Is anybody here think we're gonna break in? This neighborhood was the neighborhood. I enjoyed it because my brothers and sisters, you know, I had moved them from Macon, Georgia here. And this is the first time they had a chance to live in a house like this. You know, in Macon, they had homes like this, but only white people lived in them. And for them to have opportunity to live in a home like this with cars that was theirs, felt good to give them something that I never had before. I think the same lady still lived next door over there that was living there when I had my monkey, Tutti Frutti. Yeah, he used to raise so much sand up in this neighborhood. He was biting everything.
When I first met him, I was a teenager, and he lived around the corner. And he was a wonderful person. He was very loud and boisterous. You automatically seen him coming.
Sir Lady Java.
He made me laugh, and I made him laugh. And he said he didn't know that I wasn't a woman, that I was gay. And I said, I'm Sir Lady. And he he would look at me. I said, oh, you know what I'm talking about, bitch. Says, oh, hand me that. He kind of liked me, but we never did get together. He went both ways. He liked a girl called Angel. He loved Angel.
Send me some loving.
Oh, their relationship, boy, was on fire. And he couldn't even wait to get back to the bed. He would take her in the back seat of the limo, because he loved the limo.
Can you send me your kiss?
Richard's girlfriend, Lee Angel.
It was a lot of fun. Richard's fantasies are the greatest song on earth.
In the limo.
Oh, they should just keep Lee and take Angel off. Oh, she is a whooper. She's a wonderful girl. You know, she's beautiful. She's loving, she's kind.
Archive photos, including one with her and Richard on stage.
It was true love. He wanted to get married to her, but she was young, and she had to live her life. He was devastated because he really wanted to marry her. After that, his feelings became very private, and he stayed private.
Tall palm trees.
At that time, Richard discovered at Specialty Records, the way things were done with the royalties. I don't know the percentages of the contract, but it was terrible. It was terrible.
If you spoke for your money, you was a troublemaker. But if you just went along with the program and didn't say nothing, you was a good boy. Never a man, a good boy. By the record companies not paying me my royalties, I had to work all the time.
Bandmate, H.B. Barnum.
Richard, yes. When I come on the tour, Richard had such a charisma. That, along with his tremendous talent, would just made it natural, you know. I said, of course. Oh, it was exciting. I mean, you know, I was young. I was raised in Los Angeles. So when I went south, that was quite an experience for me.
Barnum is black.
I remember there were colored and white restrooms. Well, I thought it was funny. But later on, I began to realize that this was a serious situation.
Policemen would stop me and make me wash my face. I couldn't go to the bathroom. Oh, that was the hottest thing in the country. And I remember we was in a hotel in Montgomery, Alabama, and the Ku Klux Klan made us get out of the hotel at 4:30 in the morning with white sheets on, made us leave the hotel. You know, if you're black, you're in trouble.
A lot of the gigs that we did, it was segregated audiences. There'd be a rope down the middle of the dance hall. That's how stupid it all was, you know.
I am Little Richard. Come up and listen.
Come on, the kids.
Young people dancing. Shots of white and then black people dancing, then a mixed audience.
Richard reached out to every one of the audience. The kids were going crazy. And then what started to happen was that the kids danced together. I had never seen nothing of that before. For a brief minute, we realized we have so many things in common.
Richard broke barriers down. White kids were loving him. Everyone was loving him.
A white drummer and a black saxophonist. Richard's friend and spiritual advisor, Reverend Bill Minson.
Some people would say, well, you know, you can't compare Little Richard to a Dr. King. Well, Dr. King believed in nonviolence, and he went in places that he wasn't supposed to go to make change. I see a very strong parallel to what Richard did.
A mixed audience clapping.
Rock and roll, it brought the races together because music is a universal language.
Problem was, it threatened the establishment.
The obscenity and vulgarity of the rock and roll music is obviously a means by which the white man and his children can be driven to the level with the nigger.
It just all depends on how you look at it. I guess if you want to think it's nasty or sexy, you could, but to me it's just...
The two things are not necessarily the same.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just so limber and loose. I mean, it's really marvelous.
Well, he just feels the rhythm, digs it the most. You don't see anything wrong with it.
No.
White fans.
The white kids like me. They loved me. And all the white girls were screaming over me. And the system didn't like it, you know. And the white family said that I was rockers, I was demonic, I was demon-possessed, whatever you would say. I was awful. I was not supposed to be the hero for their kids.
A headline reads, "Does rock and roll cause delinquency?"
To be a history nerd for a second, rock and roll becomes popular right at the moment when black activists are having a lot of success with desegregation.
In some cases, Negroes achieved full integration at terminal restaurants and waiting rooms.
We still advocate nonviolence, passive resistance, and still determined to use the weapon of love.
This set off a panic. You've got a lot of worried white people.
They want to throw white children and colored children into the melting pot of integration.
Rock and roll has got to go, and go it does.
For Little Richard, the white segregationist backlash didn't surprise him too much, but in black churches, there was also a lot of preaching against rock and roll that hit him much harder.
I went to interview him, and he'd said to me, "Oh, Dr. Rock, let me tell you what the Lord has told me to tell you." He would talk about rock and roll being the devil's music. He felt that he was going with the devil instead of going with the Lord, and that played on his mind.
Archive footage of an airport.
We would talk about religion. Didn't mean anything to me until the plane trip.
1957, an airliner takes off.
He was flying first class. All of us were in coach, you know. Now, whatever happened to the front of the plane, I don't know.
When I was on this airplane, the engine turned red and hot. Plane didn't catch on fire, but it scared me. In my mind, I could see two angels flying up under the plane.
He came through the door and said, "Y'all all going to hell if you don't repent." Everybody said, what is this? What's going on? He had everybody in praying. I mean, everybody. And, you know, we were like, oh, yeah? He told me that he was going to quit the business, become a preacher. It was a complete shock.
In time-lapse footage, white clouds scud across the sky. The voice of Art Roop.
It was very difficult because Richard could have blown his nose and we could have recorded it and sold it. We did everything trying to get him to come back, including withholding his royalties, but he wouldn't record the devil's music anymore. I don't know the real reason. I suspect it was typical Richard other than what he reveals.
I think he got tired of being ripped off, and so it was over.
A newspaper story about him retiring begins Negro rock and roll singer.
That was it for him then.
Tawana Steptoe.
After he leaves the world of rock and roll,
I'm going to tell.
He starts to make gospel recordings. He becomes a student at a religious college.
A photo of Richard behind a pulpit, holding a book and pointing in the air.
He marries a nice woman. And though the marriage doesn't last very long, on the outside, it looks like little Richard was trying to straighten himself out.
I met Richard, like, maybe early 80s. The funny story with me would always be, okay, we're in the limo. Richard says, well, Bill, are you a fool again for Jesus today? And then I happily say, yes, I am. Don't ever let it change. And then we both just start laughing. In over three decades that I knew him, the only fragility that I would relate to Richard would be, is this going to be good enough for God?
I remember that time he was very serious about his religion. I mean, Richard was a teenager when he was fooling with drag. You grow up and being yourself is a hard thing to be. I would like it if he was able to be real with himself. But he didn't have that kind of nerve.
The cover of his album called The King of Gospel Singers.
The consequence of Little Richard's focus on gospel was that in the United States, in mainstream popular music, he largely gets forgotten.
Liverpool, England, 1962. Ringo Starr.
After I joined the Beatles in 62, we got the opportunity to play the Liverpool Empire. If you're not from Liverpool, you won't understand. We're playing the Liverpool Empire.
Little Richard winds up getting booked for some dates in the UK. But he goes there fully expecting to be a gospel performer. The Beatles were supporting him. They had not yet broken big. They weren't major stars.
Love to play on the same stage as Little Richard was huge. I'll always be true, so
please. A photo of the Beatles with their trademark bowl haircuts and winkle picker boots.
And then, lo and behold, Brian, the manager, brought us backstage. Little Richard, you know, was this close. It was so great.
All four of them hold his hands at the same time.
When did you meet the Beatles?
In Liverpool.
Brian Epstein said they want to just touch you. Let me show this up to the audience. Look at there. Paul grabbed my hand and he rubbed my shoulders. John got my finger and George got my finger and Paul got my arm.
And they made a wish.
They all and that's
they,
around.
They were just pulling back and I said, pull me.
We were blessed. You know, if you look at music and where rock came from, he is right in there.
When I first went to see him in 62, I remember, you know, you were just waiting for, you couldn't wait to get there. And then somebody said he would only sing the gospel. We all looked and we didn't know what the hell to say or do.
In black and white footage, he shakes a tambourine as he approaches a microphone.
In that moment, Richard sees that he has to make a decision about what kind of music to perform.
Rapper and performer Big Frida.
I come from gospel music, and it was definitely a toss-up for me when I switched from sacred to secular music. It's like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on another. What are the church going to think? What are the community going to think? You have to try to find which way that you want to go.
Richard stands at a piano. People in the studio audience jump to their feet and start to dance.
In a world of chaos and commotion and strife, we need a little joy. I never leave my fans again because they need me and I need them. We help each other so much.
He dances, holding the microphone, then waves his hand in the air. His face glistens under the studio lights as he bounces on the spot. He jumps up and down, then shakes his head vigorously as he sings. His shirt is soaked with sweat as the performance comes to an end.
As a drummer, as a musician, it was so great. You know, a really great memory for me, you know, because that was the start of it. You know that he was like a huge influence on us.
Richard, did you really teach Paul how to do that yell?
Yes, I did.
I loved all those interviews he did where he was telling everybody that he taught Paul how to yodel.
How did you
People
do it?
People standing in the wing of the stage, and I would say, woo! He would say, woo! I said, woo! He said, woo! I said, woo! He'd go, woo!
Well, he didn't teach him. That was always the joke. Paul just decided to woo! And little Richard, from that day on, told him how he taught Paul to woo! But that was little Richard. You know, we love the men.
What happens next is that little Richard immediately gets booked to headline another British tour.
A photo of Richard with his signature pencil moustache and bouffant hair flopping over his forehead. Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones.
I was a total fan, and the idea of working with Richard was just like a dream, you know. Baby, won't you give all that love? I was in my first week as a rock and roll star. I mean, before that, I was just a musician in a club band.
The Rolling Stone was opening my show.
Did nobody know them but their mothers? Mick, you know I'm telling the truth. Keith, I'm telling you. Didn't nobody know Keith and Mick but their families? It was really something.
So suddenly, there we are on this huge tour, and Mick and I used to try and find our way up into the rafters of the theatres and just watch it from above and see how he operated. It was an insight to how hard you might have to work if you wanted to do this stuff, you know. And he did it with a beautiful nonchalance. It was high-powered, but he always had a feeling that there was more in the tank. It was a real lesson in stagecraft. Especially since we had never seen a stage before. That whole tour was a university of rock and roll. Amazing. And also, I tell you what, Richard, it shows you what fun it could all be. You know, I mean, you'd be outrageously camp some nights and... you know, incredibly funny, especially in the north of England, to watch the local bigwigs being introduced to Little Richard, and he would mercilessly rag them, man. And it was, you know, he'd kiss them, you know, he'd stroke them, you know.
Mick Jagger was sleeping on the floor in Bo Diddley's room because my room was full, as always. I had nowhere to walk because I was saying, next, next!
The Stones with Peter Whitehead's Charlie Is My Darling.
See the joy, boys.
He just watched Mick Jagger. You can see he borrowed a lot of stuff directly from blues and rhythm and blues. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Now, let me ask you what Mick Jagger learned from you, Richard.
How to walk. That's, you know, I'm telling you the truth, Mick. If you agree with that, Mick, I'll put back on my glasses. Yeah. Okay.
Just watch us. You live and learn and borrow, you know. And it was after that tour, playing with Little Richard, the Rolling Stones became the Rolling Stones.
It was really amazing to see that these people have been inspired by me. I felt unworthy, but blessed and thankful.
Los Angeles, California. Reels of tape and studio equipment.
We go from bar 40.
Little Richard called me and said, I want you to produce the album. Of course, yeah, you know. It was fun, you know, because this is the first time that I could tell him what to do. He said, oh, baby, you work me too hard. You work me like a slave. So that was quite an experience for me and an honor for me. We were talking about we're going to go on the road and do a world tour and everything. Nothing really happened.
By the late 60s to early 70s, Richard's new rock and roll records were not selling. Richard blamed the record label.
I started asking about my money and they stopped pushing my records. As soon as I wanted my money, they stopped playing them because they didn't want to pay me. That's the way it went. That's the way it was.
Little Richard felt like it was because of racism. And what is true is that in the world of popular music, people are associating rock and roll with white performers. Now, rock and roll has a white face.
As most of you are well aware by now, Beatlemania has hit the United States as the group has four of the top-selling 20 records.
The Beatles, and then later on, the Stones.
There was a sort of total sea change in America.
250,000 fans of the Rolling Stones.
The America before the British invasion is a totally different place. Everything that went before, they sort of threw it in the garbage can. It's amazing enough, because this is the stuff that we're playing back to them, you know? It seemed incredible to us.
It's easy to get discouraged. In your heart, you say, man, forget it. And it makes you mad, and then you say, well, I'm just going to do what I do best.
Even though Little Richard was being outsold by the people who were inspired by him, the response from Richard, it's so defiant.
That's when I started looking more and more fabulous.
You're beautiful!
Everything I put on was a diamond.
When I started working with him in the 70s, he took it up at least another 100 notches. He always was innovative in what his style was like, where his clothes was like, what designs he would be wearing. It just went to a whole nother level.
Mr. Eller, Little Richard.
You can see the headbands and stuff that he was wearing. And that mirror outfit that he had on. He was the pioneer of that look in show business. He had no fear at all, because he was confident in who he was. He brought glamour to rock. If you look at other artists at that time, you can see he's influenced so many musicians throughout the world.
Nile Rodgers.
In the year 1982, when David Bowie walked up to me when we were thinking about the album that would become Let's Dance, after doing a ton of searching and listening and going to different archives, he walks up to my apartment. He's got something behind his back, knocks on my door, but I open the door and he says, "Now, darling, I want my record to sound like this looks." And he goes, wham. He whips out a picture of Little Richard. As soon as he showed me that and said that, we were done. Like, let's go, bro. I know I got it. Little Richard was just so far ahead of his time, but it's hard to be a pioneer.
Let all the women folks say, woo! Let all the men say, oh my soul. I want you all to know that I am the king of rock and roll.
He stands on the stage and salutes the packed Wembley Stadium. He's wearing pearl necklaces and a yellow outfit decorated with dozens of small mirrors. In slow motion, the white limo drives through the nighttime streets of LA. Little Richard's valet, Charles Moore.
After the gig, once we got back to the hotel room, all kind of people would be there. Yeah, I love you, Little Richard, I love you. You want this? I'll do it to you. Take off your clothes and just do it. There was just people like that. And he knew where to get them, how to get them, especially with the drugs involved.
Everybody liked to go to orgies. Everybody. I just enjoyed sex in its entirety. Sex to me was like a smorgasbord. You should just go and pick whatever you want. And if you knocked on my door and I wanted more, it for sure.
He did it in excess. Everything in excess. You know, women, men, orgies, wine, whiskey, weed, angel dust, cocaine, heroin. It's called speedballs and mixed the two. You inject this pure stuff and kill you. Like some people I know, some musicians I know that did that. It's not good. He had them demons he had to fight. When I saw a side of Richard, he just wanted to have peace. And maybe it's someone, either a man or a woman, that he could share his life with. Someone that he loved.
I was lonely. I felt that no one wanted me, although you had millions of fans screaming over you all over the world. But you just wanted somebody to be with you personally that said, "Little Richard, I love you. I care for you, Richard."
Lee Angel.
Someone told him that I was looking for him, and he reached me. I flew to Los Angeles. And at the airport, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, LAX, 17 crazy-looking guys got out of a limousine, and Richard got out with this red and gold back wing outfit and his pompadour and his makeup, yelling, "Shut up!" I saw the loneliest man I'd ever seen in my life. He was drinking, he was doing drugs, he was smoking, which is funny. In the beginning, Richard didn't do anything. He did not believe in anyone doing these things. He had me try PCP for the first time. And it just... He just wasn't the person I knew anymore.
In a video clip, he's wearing a medallion and a headscarf.
That's when I found out that I had really fallen. You know, I started looking real old, and I got real small, and I got so that I didn't want to see my mother and my sisters and brothers, because I didn't want them to see me in that condition. So I said, it's time to get right with God.
During that time, well, he changed. He came to my hotel room. We talked for hours about his life. He didn't want to be gay anymore. It's a pitiful thing to see a person not loving himself. He just came to a point where he said, "I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be rock and roll. I don't want to be Little Richard."
Hey. 1976, a car passes a Holiday Inn.
My brother Tony called me and asked me to see him. Instead of going to see Tony, I picked up a guy by the name of Tom. And we went and checked in the hotel and just have a good time to get high and let it all hang out. The next morning, my brother fell dead. With a heart attack.
When Rich's brother Tony died, that had a profound effect on him. He felt he should have gone to see his brother, and so that guilt laid on him and it magnified in his mind. This was the last straw. The parties and the cocaine, the orgies, all of that was over.
Under a grey evening sky, the limo pulls over at a white clapboard building with a large cross above the door. The Landmark Community Church.
He was the king of rock and roll. Now he's the child of the king. Let's welcome and receive the one and only Brother Little Richard. Come on.
1984, the congregation get to their feet as Richard makes his way to the front. His hair is shorter and he's wearing a black suit and white shirt.
I didn't
didn't come here to preach. I came here just to talk to you. And I'm not that type of preacher. You know, I know you probably figured that I was going to start moaning and groaning. My granddaddy used to do that and kill me when he get to the house. You see, my granddaddy would get down Sunday morning. Sister said, go on and tell it, preacher. Whoa. Said, go on and tell it. Said, my. Said, go on and tell it. Hey. Said, go on and preach it. And go, my. Said, tell it. Said, whoa, tell it. Hey, tell it. Woo, tell it. He ain't told him nothing yet.
I'm an evangelist now. I feel high all the time, but I don't take anything. I just don't have a desire. I think that my days should be spent now, at the age of 52, spreading the gospel.
Well, the Bible said, for what shall it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give
sweet
God
hearing his voice. The first time I saw him minister the gospel, I just knew this was an incredible guy.
I came here tonight to tell you that Jesus loves you. How God changed me from being homosexual and made me a man. Do you want to hear that tonight? Do you want to hear it?
What he was doing was revealing himself and revealing we all have demons.
I didn't know that homosexuality was wrong until I read it in the Bible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what, when you come out and pronounce it publicly like that, to say, okay, I took a left turn instead of a right turn, but I'm on the right path now, and this is the reason why, and I'm on the right path so much, I don't care about where you know I came from. Look at where I'm going, and I'm telling you that's where you need to go.
Richard, how are you? Nice to see you, sir.
When he goes on David Letterman, the first thing that's really striking to me is that he doesn't look like Little Richard. Not the one that I knew.
This would be Little Richard.
Looks like he's going to go sell used cars. And the producers show footage of him from the 70s. This is the person who brought queer aesthetics into rock and roll.
Little Richard.
But you can really see a sadness. I think that he does have this kind of internal conflict about the music that he was performing and the way that he presented himself.
When you see yourself in action in the old days, is it you want to get back into it on that level?
I'm just so glad God brought me out of that. I never knew I looked like that. I'm just so glad that God was able to clean me up and wash me up, and thank you, Lord.
I think he came there to almost apologize, preaching against homosexuality.
You keep saying one provocative thing after another. You used to be gay, but now you're not.
I'm not. I'm a man for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I know how you feel now.
In life, we have to make choices. He chose one over the other.
Little Richard.
The architect of rock and roll wasn't playing rock.
Did you miss anything of the old life, of the rock star adulation?
No, I don't miss. I don't miss it because I came from rock and roll to the rock of ages, so I can't miss it. I have something better.
At that stage, I was a journalist and rock and roll DJ. I went to interview him. He spotted this guy painting a house, and he pulled in. Oh, yeah. Hi there, brother. How are you doing? Oh, it's Little Richard. He comes up from the ground and throw his arms around him and all that. He just loved people. And you could see the confusion in his life. Yeah, I asked him, can I write your life story? The things he told me just left you gobsmacked.
This week sees the publication of one of the most remarkable and revealing accounts ever of the life of a major pop star.
Well, joining us right now is a true legend.
Get up and applaud Mr. Little Richard.
Would you welcome Little Richard?
This resurgence of my fame, it made me feel alive again. And I just thank God for Dr. Rock coming over and writing a book on my life.
When he's promoting the book, there is a sense of pride.
I am young and beautiful, am I right?
He's very candid.
You were not afraid to write truthfully about things that people would not. You weren't afraid to write about drugs. You weren't afraid to write. We'll talk
about sex.
Your sex life.
He's thinking about life and who he was.
I want to say this about the word homosexual. Personally, I don't like that word homosexual. I want to say it, gay, being gay. I would like to say that one thing that I've learned in my evangelism, discrimination and segregation is so heavily still in the world today. It's here now. How people segregate against a person because they're gay. God loves us all.
All of those things, he didn't think that was fair. He was ready to talk about.
Richard Penniman, better known as Little Richard, filed suit in federal court this week, claiming he's been defrauded of music royalties due him since 1959.
Little Richard made headlines when he sued Specialty Records.
Yeah, a lot of people would think that you're a millionaire by now, many times over.
I am, but I just haven't received the millions. I'm not only standing for myself, but I'm standing for many black people that have been ripped off, that was not paid, and they was used and abused.
For black performers, the standard deals back there for royalties was like 2%. Who gets the other 98%? Hey, you know it.
I'm not asking for nothing that don't belong to me. All I want is what I have earned, and I would appreciate it so much.
I grew up hearing rock and roll was robbed. Black people invented rock and roll, but they were exploited.
Last summer, Congress looked into the ripoff of artists and writers.
When Richard winds up settling, he also proved all of those stories to be correct.
And I want to commend you on behalf of all of those who've been afraid to come forward prior to this time.
He did get a settlement for Specialty. The settlement allowed him to live in a hotel. He loved hotels because he loved the room service and all of that stuff. And of course, I would go visit him. And he would want to talk about the music of the time. Who's this new thing? Who's this new guy coming up, you know?
Prince.
You don't have to.
The hair, makeup look very, very like Little Richard. And she said, I was the first one. I was doing it before y'all. Prince, are you listening? He would constantly say that. There wouldn't be no Prince or no Michael Jackson without me.
Your bird is mine. Okay, you're right. Just show your face.
When you look at Michael Jackson with his own feminine aesthetic, the look and style, the whoops and hollers, they've upset these firm divisions between masculine and feminine. So I don't think we get to a Michael Jackson moment without a Little Richard moment 3 decades earlier. In fact, you can find similar examples all the way through the 80s.
I remember the first time I ever met Little Richard and the first time I met Liza Minnelli. And both of them commented on what I was wearing. I mean, Liza, this is her exact words. She went, I want that, and that. And Little Richard said something to the effect of, what are you talking about, baby? I did that 25, 30 years ago. He always made me laugh. But Little Richard, at that moment, is telling you everything about the world of being a black artist at his time.
I think if you think about who invented rock and roll, who did create this style of music, usually, you know, your Elvis Presleys get the accolades.
Presley died at the age of 42 at Graceland, the mansion his music had paid for.
He was the undisputed king of rock and roll.
Crowds at a memorial.
He was the birth of rock and roll, and he'll live on forever.
I would have thought Elvis got to be the king of rock and roll.
Pat Boone.
I liked Elvis very much, yeah. But Richard was the one that created a new type of music. But the white media would always put Elvis first.
When I started singing rock and roll, wasn't nobody singing it. Listen, when I started, wasn't nobody saying that.
He found it very hard. That was the way it was, racism in America.
See, they didn't want a black guy to be the one that created rock and roll because the white kids liked it. And they didn't want the white girl screaming over no black boy. And by me being a black guy and a good-looking black guy.
When he get on TV, he seemed so jolly. He seemed so friendly about it.
And you know I'm not conceited.
No.
I've never been that way.
No.
You know I don't believe in stuff like that.
I hope don't nobody mistake.
I'm not conceited. I'm convinced.
He laughed and joked about it on TV, but it wasn't funny to Richard. My friend Richard, if he were living today, I wouldn't say this. In the back room when we was alone, he had tears in his eyes. You could see the hurt. I understood him so much. Not just as a man, as a blues singer, as a black man. They stole his music. And when they crowned Peebles as the king of rock and roll, and it wasn't him, that tore Richard.
In a photo, Richard is at the piano, staring at the camera, mouth open as if singing. Radio City Music Hall, 1988.
The Grammy Awards here in New York.
It's the first time the ceremony has been held here in 7 years, as the music business gathered to honor its best.
The Grammys are the industry's way of celebrating itself.
Right here, honey.
Okay. Wait a minute, I'm gonna smile like a white lady.
And that year, you know, Michael Jackson was supposed to be the glittery center of this show. But, you know, Little Richard had been invited to the party.
The one and only Little Richard!
And even though he's never being given a Grammy Award, he's there presenting one.
Alongside Buster Poindexter, a white singer and actor with a tall pompadour quiff.
But
I used to wear my hair like that. They take everything I get, they take it from me. He can't get that though.
All right, now they're done.
Wait a minute, look at their hair.
Because he was tense.
I used to have Easter eggs in mine.
He's influenced all these people throughout his career.
Now?
Shut up.
He didn't get his just due. But Richard didn't just lay down and cry.
And the best new artist is...
He did what he needed to do.
Me. I have never received nothing. You ain't never gave me no Grammy. And I've been singing for years. I am the architect of rock and roll. You ain't never gave me nothing.
That was a beautiful moment. You can see everybody in the audience think that it's time to give him his flowers.
And I am the originator. And I still say, woo! And the winner is still me.
When I watch that footage, it reminds me of church, where people get up and testify, where they lay their burdens down. And that's the path to salvation. So Little Richard came to testify on this night. And he does it in such a Little Richard way.
Shut up.
Woo!
The winner really is me.
It's a beautiful thing to watch Little Richard take up space.
Richard.
Richard.
Shut up. And the winner is Jody Wiley.
A moment for him where he can honor the people who were inspired by him and at the same time remind people who tend to forget, I helped create that.
Ladies and gentlemen, stand up and give it up for the incredible Little Richard.
After that, he started getting the recognition that had been missing.
The 1997 American Music Awards.
Seeing that is reminding me, I was 83 years old when I won my first Grammy. It wasn't because I didn't have big records. Because the odds were stacked against me. The odds were stacked against Little Richard. But he overcome all of that. So I understood what he was crying about. I told him, it's better late than never.
I want you to know tonight that rhythm and blues had a baby and somebody named it rock and roll.
I think that was a win for all the black people who were the originator of rock and roll. But Richard, you're the king.
Bobby Rush nods gravely. Reverend Bill Minson.
The last time I was at the hotel, I spent 3 days there, and I never saw him happier. That's my last memory of him.
In those days, they bring him out in a wheelchair, but he still loved to go out on the road. He would always say, the beauty is on duty.
Let me bring you some breaking news. The singer Little Richard has died aged 87.
Finally tonight, we're remembering a music legend, rock and roll icon, Little Richard, has died.
While he swerved in and out of the rock and roll lifestyle, Little Richard remained close to his religious and gospel roots, sometimes struggling with his own sexuality.
For me, the main thing about Little Richard's music and contribution is that before Tutti Frutti, music was always above the waist. And Little Richard took notice of the fact that that the whole body could be involved.
He left a big footprint. Crazy, wild clothes, jumping up and down, working the stage, standing on the piano. There was nobody doing it before Richard.
His life was a constant reminder of what queer black people have given to mainstream popular music.
Thinking about Little Richard brings tears to my eyes. I mean, he was one of those artists that carved out that path for others to walk down.
You know, I definitely think he has a big influence on me and everybody like me. Janelle Monáe, Lizzo, everybody in today's culture has a little of that swag of Little Richard. And they may not even know it.